Hey, baby.
Hey.
Naomi and Andy here with a quick Q/request.
Yes. So, okay, Acast is doing these audience surveys, okay? We put the link in the show notes. The link is going to be in the link tree on our Instagram and everything like that. Here's the thing, Naomi. You know, we're already pretty choosy about the ads that we allow on the show. No weapons manufacturers.
Raytheon, get out of here.
Yeah. Screw off, Raytheon. But we want to make sure that the ads are kind of tailored to y'all.
Right.
Okay? Right? Say you want to hear ads for A Different World DVD box sets.
We need to know that.
We need
can
to
go
know
out
that.
To them. We can get the word out. But we only can get the word out if you give us the word. So you got to fill out the survey. It is quick, quick, quick. And it just lets us know if the ads you're hearing are the right ads for you.
Yeah.
So get on over to the show notes where that link is or the Couples Therapy link tree and fill out that quick survey so we can pass the word on to Acast.
All right. Roll it.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Open your hearts.
Loosen your butts.
It's time,
for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Couples Therapy. I am Naomi.
And I'm Andy.
And we are a real-life couple, a real-life couple of comedians. And on Couples Therapy, we bring you comedians who are close, doing sets together about their relationship.
Right.
Live, but nowadays in studio. Okay? In the brave new world. We are in studio.
This intro is changed a lot during the quar. So
we are a real life couple of comedians, and on Couples Therapy, we Zoom with people we like and talk to them
about relationships, love, a third, not to rip off Andy Kindler, but a third thing.
Love, survival. That's the third thing, survival.
Great episode today.
A wonderful episode today. You guys, today, you've already heard their dulcet tones. Our guests are married power couple Emily Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani. Ooh, baby, baby. You know Emily and Kumail.
What song is that from? Ooh, baby, baby.
Ooh, baby, baby. Baby. I don't even. God, it's blanking. God, it's annoying. You know Emily and Kumail from their Oscar-nominated film, The Big Sick, which you can watch on Amazon. Even now.
Right.
Like, literally even now, you can thrive. Also, Kumail is in the new film Lovebirds with Issa Rae, which is on Netflix right now. And they have a podcast called Staying In with Emily and Kumail, which they started in Quar and really just captures the moment in time. This was really good because it was actually, for me, Andy, my first time really talking to Kumail. Like, I had never really met, like, I don't even know if we'd been to shows before. He was more of an LA person. Like, I really don't even think we met.
I met him once on the street in Williamsburg.
Okay, gorgeous. Stunning.
Him and, I want to say Sean Patton, comedian Sean Patton was
that
with
sounds
him.
Right. So two comics,
maybe
two
Pete,
guys.
I think I don't know.
The point is, this was a good one for people that we didn't know. I knew Emily a little bit. I talk a lot about how we're just like internet friends, and this was a good time for us to chit chat. But they were so lovely and open. So you are in for a treat of a time, okay? But before we get into that, you guys, just a reminder, tomorrow, Wednesday, June 17th, we are doing the Couples Therapy Quarantine Party on Twitch at 2 p.m. PST, 5 p.m. Eastern.
We got guests this week. You know, we're doing the approximation of our live show here in L.A.
Right, we're trying online. To capture the energy. Capture the energy, capture the moment.
Lacey Mosley and a friend is going to be on. Larry Owens and a friend is going to be on.
Yes.
You know them, you'll love them. Tune in 2 p.m. PST, twitch.tv/couplestherapypod. And we're going to use the hour to raise funds for the Okra Project.
The Okra Project is a collective based in New York that seeks to address the global crisis faced by Black trans people by bringing home-cooked, healthy meals to Black trans people wherever they can reach them. So whether they have a home or are currently unhoused, the Okra Project will get them meals. And that is real. And that's something that we all need right now. And when we're talking about Black lives mattering, Black trans lives also matter. And something as simple as food can be hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So again, as always, our Twitch show is free. But if you do donate, we will be taking all the funds and giving them to the Okra Project.
Yes. Naomi just asked people to Venmo her as a joke, but people did. So all that money will also
be going to the Okra Project. Well, because I'm always like seeing people being like my Venmo, but usually it's like after, you know, some big viral tweet or they've done something. So I was like,
here's my Cash App.
Right. And so what if I'm like, I've done nothing. I put nothing out. And it was just like, if you'd like to be an ally, just literally with like, no. And you know what? People have been very kind and supportive, and I want to pay that kindness forward to the Okra Project. So that is what we'll be doing. But you can also watch the show again, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Now, I think it's time.
Yeah. Without further ado. Roll it. Emily, you tell me. I have a feeling that Rorschach is something akin to horoscope when it comes to actually...
It's more of a pop culture reference than it is like a thing that's really, really used these days, but it's a pretty great pop culture reference. At one point in my life, I was planning on getting a Rorschach tattooed on my lower back.
Oh my God. So if you see that, everyone sees the same thing, which is opportunity. Imminent success.
And my big bit was going to be a guy would be like, you know, mid hookup, ooh, what is that? And I'd be like, what do you think it is?
Oh my God.
Oh God. I'm so happy you dodged that bullet, sister.
It's so strange because you'd have to be doggy style for that to be the topic of conversation.
Correct.
So you're sort of like, looking over your back, shouting.
I'm tossing a look over that shoulder, being like, what's up? What are you?
Whatever.
How do you feel about your mom? Let's go. I did not do that. I just thought, you know, what do therapists have that are hip? There's nothing a therapist has that is hip, which is what I was. And Rorschach is one thing that we have that's kind of hip.
I don't know if it's hip once it's on the lower back. That changes the entire dynamic.
That's exactly right.
You're right. You
Tramp
can put anything on a lower back.
And it would demean it.
It does demean it.
Yeah, you could take like the most beautiful poetry and make
Sistine
it a tramp.
Full Sistine Chapel on that lower back.
Yeah. What if you got the entirety of Freud's Civilization and its Discontents tattooed on your back?
I definitely learn a lot about the people I was hooking up with, I would say.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That could take all night, just the reading, you know. You guys, thanks for coming and talking to us today. Emily, you had written me at the top of the day being like, you sure you feel like it? Which I respect and appreciate. I know that the last week has been, whoo, child, is what I can say.
Yes, it's last week and not last 40 years.
Well, yeah. 400. But, you know, I appreciate you guys coming and chatting with us. I figure, why not spend 45 minutes just like taking a break? You know
just
what I mean?
Just taking a quick break from checking Twitter and being upset.
Exactly. We need it.
I'll say this. Hold on. I will say this. I know we're not to overstate the importance of this, but like we have gotten a lot of messages and emails from
listeners
who say they appreciate the an hour away from thinking about the crumbling American experiment.
Right. You have to shake it up.
It's interesting because I do feel like it was the way that comedy was after Trump was elected, which is like all people could talk about was that. And then it's like, do we need a distraction from that or should we just be talking about that? And I think, both. I think we need both, turns out.
Yeah, yeah. It's, the hard thing is you have to sort of decide which one you need, and you it's hard to know because sometimes you're just sitting there refreshing Twitter over and over, and it's doing something, but it's not doing what you want to be doing or what you need to be doing. So breaking out of those cycles.
Yeah, we like to injure ourselves
in an intentional way. I know. Is hard. Yeah.
I know. I was gonna say, like, do you guys know about healthy choices? Like, what are we do? What are you guys doing? Because I don't know about healthy choices in general.
I was just listening to. So I've been. This is gonna sound real.
Here we go.
Here we go. I'm not gonna sound. Just so you know, I know how I sound, right? So in this time, I started basically meditating a couple of years ago. Here we go.
Here we go.
And for me, you know, I don't consider myself spiritual in any way or anything like that. To me, meditation was just a very practical thing, right? I had anxiety. What do I need to do to decrease my anxiety so I can be a better husband and better at my job, right? So it was a very practical thing. And I really got a lot out of it. And so I've been listening. I listened to a couple of things. I listened today to a Terry Gross interview with a guy who was talking about meditating and the benefits of meditating. Mm-hmm. And another one about breathing, which is a big part of
it. Camille's been talking to me a lot about breathing lately.
About like how to regulate your own breathing. First of all, they say 30% of people breathe through the mouth, and that's like really bad for hundreds of reasons.
We call them mouth breathers.
We call them mouth breathers. But also you end up doing it without knowing it, right? So it's just like how to breathe through your nose to sort of get situated or get more energy or try and sleep or whatever it is. And so those things I can sort of use to sometimes make good decisions.
Healthy choices,
yeah. Yeah, because it can be hard, as you were saying, to like be stuck in a situation where you're not even making the choice.
Yeah, that's true.
Does it? It scares me to think about making good choices because I'm worried about what kind of person I'll be on the other side of those good choices.
Right.
Will you still be interesting?
Well, here's the
exactly.
thing. Well, here's the thing about meditating that that this guy was talking about that I've also learned. I feel like people think, we think our anxiety or our whatever our struggles are the engine that makes us creative. And that's true. However, sometimes those can take over and be harmful, right? And not just harmful to your mental well-being, but also harmful to the work you want to do. And so I find you're never going to lose your anxiety. If you meditate, you know, this guy was talking about this curve where a certain amount of anxiety actually makes you more productive. So I think if you meditate, you're not going to chill out and be a person who like doesn't do what you do anymore. This is just a way of making yourself feel a little bit better every now and then.
But you also say that you're less interesting now that you have more muscles.
Yeah, don't get muscles.
I don't think I could. I don't think I could. I don't have the dedication. I don't think I have the dedication to what it would take to get muscles. I'm like, bless your commitment to survival. To survival is what I would call it.
And yeah, you're going to need those muscles.
Exactly. But like, Kumail, with the meditation, was there like a learning curve for you? Because I found that, you know, honey, every therapist and their mother has been like, bitch, you need to get quiet. And yet I cannot take like... Literally 2 minutes feels like 9 years. My brain feels like Harlem in the 80s. Like I'm terrified to go there. You know what I mean?
Yes. I do know what you mean. Here's what I'll say to that. I think a lot of people get scared. I can't believe I'm like the meditation guy now. I really am not this guy.
You really are.
I really am not. I think people get intimidated and think they're not going to be good at it. To me, there's no, like, I'm not meditating to get better at meditating. And sometimes my sessions are, quote unquote, good. And sometimes they're not good. But even the not good ones are beneficial. I think people are too hard on themselves when they're meditating. Because as you're saying, you get a thought in your head, right? And then you're like, get the thought out. I think that can increase stress. All you have to do is be quiet. And if a thought comes in, you just like, oh, this thought is here. Let me see if I can focus on something else. And if the thought comes back again, okay, it's back. Let me see if I can focus on something else. And don't be too hard on yourself if the thought keeps coming back or if the thought doesn't go away, because it's doing a couple things. One, it is actually quieting your brain, even though there are distractions, it's still quieter than it usually is. And it's showing you how much is going on in there that you're not aware of or you're not in control of, right? It can be very easy for just all these thoughts that are always going in your brain to sort of push you out. And I think meditating at least allows you to be aware of that a little bit.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is a good session. I'll send you the copay. I'll send you the copay, Camille. This is a good
one. I'm not this guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at you in wonder.
At what point are you going to have to accept that you are this guy?
You're on the other side. Yeah,
Camille. That's what this is. This is an intervention the three of us have planned.
Camille, you're that guy.
You're that guy.
You become an LA guy. You work out. You talk about gluten-free. Well, that's Emily.
We did a flotation tank once.
Oh, here we go.
And, you're just in a floating in water, and it's completely dark, and it's like a just no senses.
It's literally you're in nothing. You feel no temperature because it's exactly your body temperature.
Oh, God, that's terrifying.
We did it for 90 minutes. It almost broke me as a person, as a soul, as a creature. It tore me asunder. Camille fell asleep.
I was like, can we do it again? It's a great
place
to nap.
You immediately fell asleep, is my opinion. Whereas I just sat with myself and died 1,000 deaths, and not in that good orgasm way. It was
No. Look, the one time I tried meditation, the egoless white nothingness of my mind that I eventually got to was so terrifying that I never wanted to do it again.
Yeah, take a glimpse and then run away. Please.
Take a glimpse, like Wellbutrin. You know what I mean? Like, I'm constantly telling people about Wellbutrin. I say, get on board, babe. It'll help.
Well, I'll say whatever works for you. You know, I'm not like everyone must meditate. It was just good for me.
No, I know. I always ask though, because it's the same way. It's interesting. Like, if I meet someone at a party and they've done some like diet or something that's really worked for them, I do want to know about it. Because really, what I'm chasing is their feeling of comfort. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, are you comfortable in your skin? Tell me what you did. like that's what I want to know. So I'm very like, go on. I'm going to write it down.
Start when you were five. What happened when you were five? And then go up.
Exactly. Who told you were enough at an early age? And now let's go from there. So Camille's here meditating. He's like getting right. He's getting muscles. Did you feel ever, like, I'll tell you why I'm asking. Because like with Andy, he's a much more regimented person than I am. He exercises every day. I had breakfast pasta, for example, today. But sometimes when I'm around him, like especially more, I think, in quarantine, because we are so around each other, I almost feel this silent pressure. Like, even though I know he's not judging, I know he doesn't give a shit, I'm always like, I should do more. I should fix this. Just by seeing someone else do stuff. Does that happen to you?
That definitely has been a slight thing. I think we both are fairly regimented. Like, we both, like, we'll exercise pretty regularly. We usually kind of have a similar eating schedule. And then he kicked things into, like, five overdrives. And he just has, like, you just have abs now. And I just look at them and I'm like, oh, was I supposed to do that too? And you're not expecting that, right?
You look great.
See, I look great, guys. It's all going to be okay. But it is that thing where, like, literally everyone in the world at every party I've been to in the last year, not anymore, obviously, because no one's doing any partying. But everybody I talked to was like just talking to me about my husband's body. That does kind of mess with you a little bit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's a weird, everybody being like, your husband, his body's amazing. He looks so fantastic, don't you? And you're just kind of like, oh, I don't know what to, and then I'm like, is everyone then conversely talking about everyone's bodies? Do we only talk about bodies when they go through a magical change?
I think we only talk about bodies when they go through it.
And then I don't know of any women that have had a similar thing of like getting ripped and the world is just like, hey, let's talk about how that lady got ripped.
Adele had a...
That's a good point.
And that was
a big
reaction.
That was true.
Yeah. That's true.
But
people
somehow
lost their minds.
Attacking Adele. We end up attacking it when it's women, I guess. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Does that warp the way that you understand... To have your body go through that kind of drastic a change, does that warp the way that you interact with the world?
That's a very good question.
I don't feel any different other than sort of just the health benefits of being someone, of just being a little bit healthier. I don't think overall I'm like that much healthier. I'm maybe 10% healthier.
I think maybe you're frightening strangers a little bit more just because you look a little bit more imposing than you used to.
What strangers am I frightening right now, Emily?
Well, literally no one right now. But
Emily was saying before this, we were at some bar and some guy was like eyeing me. Like, and she was like, oh, he sees you as like
a threat. That's how it looked to me, was that he was eyeballing Kumail like, oh, he's one of these muscle guys. I got to like assert my dominance. Whereas Kumail's just like, which... Like, yeah. What do I do here? Which appetizer should I get?
I don't feel like I've moved through the world any differently.
You really don't.
The only difference is, obviously, I knew everyone's obsessed with looks. It's weird to sort of be obsessed with my own looks in my teens and not be happy at all. And then in the 20s, be like, all right, you know what? This doesn't define me.
Acceptance.
I have to just accept how I am. This stuff is not important. And then again, in my 40s, to have that become the most important thing. First of all, for me, like, I needed to look a certain way for the role. I had decided. They did not put pressure on me. Mm-hmm. I decided. So there's that. And also the people's reaction to it, just all these, like, things that I thought I'd defeated in my mind, all these sort of demons came back where it was like, you know, I was like, people care more about what's inside you. They don't care what you look like.
No, it turns out that's not true.
People do care what you look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the demons got worked out. They got muscled. They got all muscled up. All those demons came back. Yeah.
Right.
Right. The lie to the world was ripped. The kind face of the world was ripped away, and you saw what was underneath, which is, oh, no, we are all superficial.
We're the worst people.
Correct.
We're the worst of all the people.
We're the worst. We're all the worst. We're all the worst.
Was that bad to say, Naomi? Am I being too cynical? Sorry, this last weekend, I don't know what it was about the last weekend, but...
Somehow you're like, just not feeling as rosy as you were?
I know. Well, I just thought it was funny because I just remember, I'm like, Amy Cooper, you know, the woman in Central Park, that happened on Tuesday.
Of last...
Like, it's...
Oh, my God.
Oh, right.
Like, it's not even been 1 week.
I know. I'm like, remember that? Like, we have gone through so much since that. But I feel like we've all aged 100 years.
Yeah.
We've all moved forward.
Yeah, it's
a lot.
It's a lot and it's ongoing.
Yes, the racial, existential, and ontological contradictions at the heart of our society.
Stop it, we have company. Okay, Emily, how much if now, you know, you left therapy, you got into this biz... But this biz is so sick. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are doing it together. Like, you know, are there ever moments where you long for just, like, a session? You know what I mean? Like, doing that work again? Or do you feel in any way that you bring any of that past work to this? Because you and I, like, I feel like, you know, I connected to you emotionally over this past year while working on pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like... Hi, I know we don't know each other very well. I'm going to send you a 9-page email while you're in London.
Oh, I thought I emailed you first. Did you email me first? Because I really thought I emailed you first.
Girl, I don't even know. All I know, it just became like literally a port in a fucking storm. Because I was like, this bitch said this. And you were like, accurate. And I was like, so I kind of felt like I was like, wow, okay, have I made her do therapy over email?
It is. Like, well, first off, I really thought I went to you first. So you were also my port in a storm. So I can't even say. Yeah, we were ports and storms.
Yes.
I do try to bring therapy into my current job just in that it's the only way I really know how to operate. But I do miss feeling effective at my job.
But I think you are, like, well, this is what I find infuriating about Emily is that, you know, Emily is... discipline and focus to a degree that not very few people I've met are like that. Emily sits down and writes for a certain number of hours every single day. And you'd ask, like, is it weird for her to have me have this regimented thing? And is that like stressful for her, or is that pressure on her? The pressure is on me. I mean, Emily is like every single day Emily sits and like works. And I've learned so much from her just watching her do that. Because I used to be like, you know, writing requires inspiration. The gods have to speak through me. I got to get an idea. And Emily was like, no, it's a job. You sit and write. So I've learned a lot from that. Emily really is not weirdly, but you're good at working under pressure.
No, absolutely. But I do miss when you're working with an individual or with a group or with a couple, you get to see changes that they're making, and right. you get to see the improvement, even though they often backslide, because we all do. But and I miss that. I miss working with someone one-on-one and being like, oh, I think I've made that person's life better, which is hard, you know, if you're like a staff writer on a show, you're like, whose life am I making better? Literally, like I can, that's, I'm probably making no one's life better. And I do think in times when I'm frustrated with this business, I miss feeling effective in that way. I miss like making differences in people's lives.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Also, my bad days back then were, oh, I have three people who are threatening suicide. I can't leave work until we've handled this. Right. Whereas now it's like, oh, you're not going to make the thing? Okay.
Like, right.
Wait, Emily. I'll be okay.
Or like, this notes call means they did not understand my script at all.
right.
Bad day.
Emily, did you always want to be a writer? And it just, there was no, like, I'm from Pennsylvania. I kind of always wanted to do this, but I never saw a pathway. I never even knew how to do it.
Yes.
So I went up, I was a philosophy professor before this.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then I moved to New York to start doing comedy. But I'd always wanted to, and I just kind of got, like, pushed down. Was that the same for you?
Yeah, my grandmother wrote letters to the editor of our local paper. That was like her writing exercise that she did like once every other week. And they were just about nature and they were very lovely. And that was the only person I knew who was a writer. Mm-hmm. And she didn't get paid for it. And it wasn't like, my family's just very Southern and practical. So if it's like not a practical job, then there's no point in pursuing it. Like that's just her fun little thing that she does, your grandmother does. Like that's not a career. So I always kind of knew, because there's also a lot of mental illness in my family, that I would go into therapy. But writing didn't feel like a thing that could ever actually be a job. And I didn't realize you could work in comedy and not be without being a comedian until I moved to New York, I will say.
Yeah. Because
that's when I started running shows and stuff. And I was like, oh, you can do this. You can be around comedy all the time without being a comedian, which I just didn't know. So I love that. I think you do sometimes need to be in a bigger city to kind of get that there are careers in other fields.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't even know what it was. I also like, it was definitely like middle-class Jewish parent pressure to become a professional. There was a lot of alliteration there. I didn't mean to. But like, you know, to become a doctor or lawyer.
Wow.
And I had to like punch through that.
Yeah.
My parents were just like, don't do anything that would make anyone mad at you. That was their only career aspirations for me. Don't let anyone.
And would you say that you have listened to them?
Not so much, I guess. I don't know.
Like, I don't think you like make people upset with your work, but you don't have a problem upsetting people.
No, certainly not.
Oh my God, that's so good. That's good. Like in your relationship for you both, like, obviously, you know, you've been together a long time and there's like safety and comfort there. But like in the early days, you know, and like kind of getting to know someone, would you say you're both forthright, I guess is the word? Like if you're like, I'm having a problem, or do you tend to kind of be like, well, let's just ride this out. And if I'm pushed, I guess I'll say something.
Very good question. Come on, what would you say?
One of each. Emily, from my perspective, obviously there are a lot of things that Emily is not completely forthright about all the time.
I lie.
Not lie, but you hide how you feel sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Emily has, you know, Emily's like really, really has her shit together. Mm-hmm. And she's very smart and she's together. And so sometimes even for me, I don't see sort of the tempest within because she's so good at having her coping strategies in place.
Well, I don't want to upset anyone.
Well, but it's a little unfair to her then. When she's upset, I'm like, wait, no, you're not supposed to be the upset one. I'm the one who's like, you know.
The tempest in the teapot.
I'm the disaster. I'm the mess. Can't be you. So I would say in the beginning, I had a lot of problems with really saying how I feel all the time. I would much rather not do a confrontation and just...
just be angry and stomp around angry for a few days.
But I also wouldn't even know what I was angry about.
Yeah.
Which still happens.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Emily's forced me to be more open and communicative about that stuff. Because we understand each other's patterns. So she knows like, oh, now this happened. Now he's going to be upset about this, but he's not going to know until this time. And then he's going to feel bad. Then he's going to apologize. So she knows sort of what's coming up. And so she'll be like, hey,
and so
all this is going to happen. Yeah. And I do too. Like, Is there a way we can, like, just break it right now and do something else?
Can we skip past all this bullshit so we can get to the part where you're saying you're sorry?
Right.
How long have you two been together?
A little over 10 years now.
10 years, yeah, 10 wow. years. 10 years March 11th. 10 years March 11th.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you so much. How many years for y'all?
We've been married 14 years.
We've been married 13 years.
13 years. We'll be married 14 years this year. But we got married less than a year after getting together.
Okay, hold on. We're taking a break and then we're coming back and you're telling me more. Okay? We'll be right back, you guys.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Dear listeners, Andy here doing the ad read again, and today we're talking about MeUndies. As the male half of couples therapy, I was asked to do this one because we're talking about boxers, which, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences, Naomi does not wear. Now, if you're a podcast listener like me, you've heard plenty of ads for MeUndies, and frankly, I had always thought it's underwear. How special can it be? And then I tried them, and friends, it is like wearing magic. It is like wearing a dream. It is so soft, there is nothing earthly I can compare it to. I am embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed to say I'm middle-aged and just finding this out, but the material your underwear is made out of really does make a difference. I won't say where I usually get my boxers from, but for comparison, MeUndies are like wearing a cloud covered in angel's feathers, and the other ones I wear are like wearing a bear trap smothered in puke. MeUndies got style for everyone, from all black classics to fun expressive prints in sizes extra small to 4XL. And they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that actually care for their workers. Also, I gotta point this out, there is a particular technology that the folks at MeUndies would like me to discuss. Now, you know Naomi is sex negative and I am sex neutral, so I didn't want to have to say what this technology is, so I asked friend of the show, friend in real life, Mort Burke, to say the phrase. So, okay, here it goes. For any listeners with penises and testicles, I can say medical words. You might be interested in MeUndies' sophisticated
contoured pouch and ball caddy.
What's that again, Mort? They're incredibly comfortable?
Contoured pouch and ball caddy.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Okay, soft underwear comes in all packages at MeUndies. So to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
Can we take a minute and talk about Skims? Now, you know I'm a recent Skims convert, having tried their underwear in the last few months, and I am now living lifted, supported, changed. So I decided to keep trying new stuff. And let me tell you, Skims basics and foundations are where it's at. Yes, I recently got the Soft Smoothing Seamless t-shirt. And y'all, it is so comfortable. It's been the perfect layer for me. I'm rocking it under a cardigan or a sweater when I want to keep it fitted and fabulous and not look all bulky. I mean, y'all know I'm back to work. Hashtag blessings. And I'm definitely that girl who is always cold in the office. Okay, I need my layers, but I'm still trying to look put together. And the Soft Smoothing Seamless shirt is helping me get it right. And I also got the boyfriend t-shirt in heather gray, and it is so friggin' soft and comfortable, and it's giving casual but intentional when I wear it with a pair of jeans. I'm feeling very good in it. So if you want to give these and other basics a try, shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com. Now available in sizes extra, extra small through 4X. Thank you for the range, Skims. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows. Again, that's skims.com. Go check out everything they've got and the new t-shirt shop.
Hey friends, since we are now newly independent, we don't actually have ads anymore. We may in the future, but we thought, hey,
If you'd like to support the show,
yes,
you know, there's a couple ways you can do it. If you have some disposable cash, you know, you can buy t-shirts at couplestherapy.merchnow.com. We got great, awesome t-shirts.
We've got the Couples Therapy logo t-shirt, and we've also got a Gotta Miss a Bitch t-shirt. Yes. They are lovely.
And we might have some new ones coming up soon. So, you know, if you're like, hey, I want to buy 30 t-shirts from you guys, 30 different patterns. Also, we got the Patreon now.
Yes, $5 a month. You get 2 bonus episodes and other fun bonus content. We just put up some work that Andy and I had done back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really, the episodes, you know, we spill the tea on the page. We spill the tea on the page.
Yeah, if you'd like to support the show, but you don't have some extra money around, you know, there's lots of ways you can do that. You can subscribe to the show on whatever platform you use. You can write a review. Give us a
glowing
review.
A 5-star glowing review. Because you know
Apple
those reviews,
podcast.
Like the better reviewed, the earlier they come up in lists of podcasts. You know they got a bunch of podcasts named Couples Therapy. Oh, hell to the dome. We got to get to the top of that shit. Okay? Couples Therapy Podcast.
We own the cross-state copyright on Couples Therapy.
So we need them reviews, especially now that we're independent. Let's get this out to more people. Yeah.
Tweet about the show or make an Instagram story or something like that. You know,
we love those. They lift us up, especially in Quar. It's always nice to know you're not speaking into the void. And if you are enjoying listening to us, please let other people know about it. I think that's about it, Andy. Let's give them smoke, Emily and Kumail.
And we're back.
Okay, before we broke. So you guys got married less than a year into being together. Tell me how.
Well, wait, can I ask how accurate was the film, how much of that is super accurate in terms of like the pressures it put on your relationship?
Are you talking about the Royal Tenenbaums? What movie are you talking about?
Rushmore. No, I like Wes Anderson's. I'm talking about Wes Anderson's early stuff.
We do get the shorthand of being like, yeah. If you see The Big Sick, that's how we met. It's pretty accurate overall, except for the fact that we did not break up. That was something we added for movie magic. We didn't break up before I got sick, but me getting sick like a few months into our relationship is definitely why we got married so quickly.
Yeah. Okay, so it was all there. So, okay, I didn't.
Sorry, Emily. I didn't want to force you guys to have to like retell the same tale.
No, I know. It was just more like, because I don't know how much of it, again, like some of it's movie magic where I'm like, do you speed stuff up to give me a story? You know what I mean? So I didn't know if there were like little bits and pieces.
The real truth
is
that we got engaged, we got married 3 months after I got out of the hospital, but it was thought that that was so bizarre and kind of like sounded like a Hollywood ending of a movie that we couldn't end it. Like that felt weird to end it there. So we did not.
I see.
No, I mean, there's another thing that's because Naomi and I also work on things that are quasi autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's strange to have to fit your actual life into a fictional narrative.
It's bizarre. It's weird. Yeah, and it's a thing because everybody's life contains every genre, right? Like your story as a couple contains horror, it contains romance, it's comedy, it's drama, and to have to like figure out which story you're going to tell is super, super weird.
It's also you think everything that happened to you is super interesting, but really finding the story within it is like not, you know? You just have to... That's why with us, it was very helpful to have people who could sort of read it and give us thoughts.
Be like, this is dumb.
Guide us through. Yeah.
Right. It's like, you are not that charming. We're going to have to cut this. I know what you mean. Because that's what I feel like would happen with us. And I think it wasn't just that, but sometimes I almost, when you and I were working on this show, Andy, it would almost be a way to retread fights. Do you know what I mean? And I'd be like, okay, I'm writing an iteration where I am perfect, I do no wrong, I say the right thing.
Well, that's the problem. Like, I was writing a version of myself that, where I thought some of the flaws were sanded down, and that made it an uninteresting character. It's strange. We had to actually change our characters' first names so that
just
we
could
have...
Just to get some distance.
Yep, just for the distance.
Because then I could, like, give that person, A, my actual flaws, and also different flaws. but otherwise,
it's
I was
true.
Trying to... Yeah, create like too perfect a character. Like, I'm like, no, this has to, like, I can't confront like my own problems when I'm writing this.
Too much to do. Too much to do on a deadline.
We talk about that a lot, how like characters will often be too processed because you're like, if you're talking about yourself in the past, but you've already learned those lessons, like, how do you go back to the mindset of the person who hasn't learned those lessons yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing to do. And we're not always kind of great at it. And also, like, in our movie, Kumail writes Emily, and I'll use first names because that's the character's names. Kumail writes Emily's name in Urdu on a napkin and, like, sends it to, like, gives it to her to, like, kind of impress her. And Emily in the movie is like, oh, this is a dumb move that you use on every girl. Whereas Emily, the person, was like, oh, that's so hot. And it's a little embarrassing because he did do that to, you know, every woman he dated. So.
Not every woman I dated, just the gullible ones.
Oh. So I was able to use the movie to correct that, like, kind of corniness in my own past of falling for that.
Right, right, right.
I was actually afraid. I don't know if I ever said this, Naomi, but I was actually afraid that it would dredge up shit for us.
To write that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
it? Yeah. What did you, like, did that happen for you guys at all? Or just in general, just working side by side, even if it's not together? Does it ever?
Overall, it was very helpful and continues to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see things, I understand her more because we've gone through this stuff together. It can be very easy to, like, assign motive to somebody when you sort of, you're like, oh, okay, so she's doing this to piss me off, whatever, or she doesn't understand, or whatever. And then when you read her writing and see things from a perspective, you understand that it's not, like, directed at you.
Yes.
And for us, writing that movie really was, because it wasn't so much about the disagreements or the arguments we had back then, although some of it was, but it really was me. I never understood her perspective on going through that, on getting sick, and I still don't completely understand that, but now I know I don't understand it, whereas before writing the movie, I sort of thought that I got it, where really, I don't get it, and I probably never will get it.
And you don't have to.
No, I don't have to, but I have to give you space then to have reactions based on that experience that don't always make sense to me.
I hear you. You hear how processed we are, guys? We're so good at this.
We're very good at pretending to have our shit together.
You guys have it together. I love, look at that, the loving kindness, the patience.
This might be the healthiest relationship that we've ever had on the show.
I think so.
Well, what we do is before podcasts, we fight all day.
Absolutely.
And right then for the hour and a half, before and after, then we're fine. Yeah. And then we fight again.
Yeah. That way. And when we had a podcast together before, you could have made a podcast out of the number of times that we started the podcast and then went, oh, fuck you. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay, we got to start again.
Let's start over. Hey, this is Emily. This is Kumail. Yeah, totally. It's we've worked together for so long that we've sort of gotten much better at it. That said, we still have...
You still work... Sometimes you're working out your stuff through while you're working. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you're having the arguments you would normally have about dishes, about, like, work, and, like, your egos get involved.
Yes,
with, like,
totally.
Who's able to do this better? Who's better at this part of it? It's... Writing with a partner is not for the faint of heart, I would say.
Is that what you wanted? Like, did you plan to do that? I will say, because I was very resistant. Andy is more of a collaborator. You know, like, before, he was, like, doing sketch stuff. He was in a band, several bands. Like, he likes to kind of work with a group. And I feel very much the stand-up cliche of, like, leave me alone. This is my time. And so it was, but then at the same time, when you're with somebody who is funny and gets it, and you'll start, you know, riffing or vibing, and you're like, let's do this. But I was so resistant to it. Did you ever have that, like, I want us to just be lovers?
What do you mean was?
Okay, still am at times. Accurate.
Emily's more resistant.
I was more resistant.
And I'm more, I like
even though you're the stand-up.
Even though I'm the stand-up, I like working with people and that. And Emily still prefers to work on her own.
That's not true. I like working with you quite a bit.
Right, but us. but I mean with other people.
You don't
like, it's not your favorite thing to collaborate on writing other than with people who you are married to.
That is correct. Yeah. I do feel like it is kind of a solitary activity in my head. It always, like, for me, it always has been. But it works out because, like, especially, like, we've gotten a lot done amazingly enough through the pandemic because we've had time and we've been together and, like, I don't have to, like, make an appointment to go, like, set up time to go work with my writing partner. Can you imagine? That sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah.
Where are we going to meet? Do we need a separate space? Like, how are there going to be snacks? Like, do I have to wear clothes? None of that stuff we have to worry about so much, which is truly amazing.
I'm thinking about, like, our relationship where Naomi is the more of the public persona than I am, where, you know, I'm just more of a writer. And it is interesting, you know, especially in the last, like, you know, 5 years or so, as Naomi's public persona has changed.
Not too much. Don't get impressed. But just, you know, you get some followers. You get some followers.
I know. Yeah.
But it hasn't changed the dynamic so much, but it's changed the public perception of what our dynamic is.
Yes, I know what you mean.
I wonder if the same thing has happened to you guys.
We definitely, and listen, this is what's interesting. This is like a great experiment for how you can take sexism out of the equation a little bit, because many people are like, isn't it so sweet that Kumail wrote that movie for you? People say that to me all the time.
What?
Like, oh, the muse of The Big Sick, Emily Gordon. Oh, and it's, my God. I am frequently, when you and I work together, left out of people think that you've
done
everything.
But in reality, you really helped.
I do think, and people are always like, oh, it's sexism, you know, don't leave her name out. But it's not just sex. It is partially sexism, but it's also just that Kumail is more well-known than I am by a long shot and has a more of a public persona. And so it does change the dynamic of me being like, literally like, oh, and I helped, like I was there too. And it feels weird to have to do that. So I think we started, but you're completely right that it's not just sexism. It is just a matter of him having a larger public persona. And Kumail, you've been really great about continually like acknowledging that I've helped, as you just did. But it is a weird thing. And it does kind of make, it kind of fucks with my ego a little bit, for sure, to hear that like I'm kind of being erased from it entirely. But you can't completely blame sexism, as it turns out, as you two have shown.
Yeah.
As much as I'd like to.
I know.
Right.
I know.
It's just our disgusting society.
Yes. Bring it back. Bring it back, Andrew. Bring it back to the disgusting society. Kumail, was there ever a moment for you when you realized that change was taking place? Because I was, again, 14 years, y'all are such a team, you know.
Well, you've always been the
what,
more well.
What
I mean,
kind of change? Like becoming more known? That
No, but like more people, like realizing the way, what people were thinking about the relationship, kind of putting Emily as like the muse instead of the co-writer.
I mean, Emily, you know, the first thing that we did together was The Big Sick. And so I didn't really...
Well, we did Meltdown together.
Right.
Yeah.
But I feel like people, you know, for a long time, people will be like, oh, Emily's a secret weapon. Emily's a secret weapon. Because I would write stand-up and I would run everything by Emily, and Emily's really, really funny. And so people, you know, would always be like, Emily's funny in her own right. That kind of
thing. That is the most,
kind of
don't
thing,
ever say that to
hate.
Me. No slouch. Don't ever
right.
say
she's
to me.
She's no slouch
she's
either.
She's no slouch either.
You know,
go
actually, she's the funny one in that house. That
because you can hear the condescension in it all the way across the board. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Exactly. So then, but from the movie, you know, because it's me on screen playing me and
course,
somebody else on screen playing Emily. So... Yeah, I noticed right away that sometimes, but I do like to think it's changing because Emily's done a lot of stuff. She's done a lot of writing.
I've had pilots fall apart.
She's had a lot of pilots fall apart, so she's really left a wake of destruction.
Bones and gristle.
There's just bones and tombstones everywhere. No, I think Emily's become like more like well-known and respected for her writing. And so I think that sort of helped you, unfortunately, get credit for the Big Sick in a way.
That's the thing that I think I had to kind of convince Kumail of, like, I do want to write stuff on my own. And it's not because I don't love working with you, but it's because I have to show people that I don't, it's not, you're not the brains behind the operation entirely.
Yes. Right. Because afterwards I was like, after we did this, I was like, all right, so let's just keep writing together. That's all we'll do. And Emily was like, no. I want to do some stuff on my own and some stuff with you. So that's kind of what we've done.
And by the way, I also get congratulated for Lovebirds, which I will take all day long. I have nothing to do with that movie. I was at one table read. But I will take as much credit as possible. So I it's weird. I do think, and do you guys get that too? Do people congratulate the other one on stuff that the other one did? Does that make sense?
I think Naomi is more like, sucks up more of the accolades.
Sucks up the energy in the room. Sucks up the accolades.
When you say sucks up, tell me more about that.
I was trying to think of a metaphor. I was
And the best you could do was sucks up?
Yep. That's what he could bring to the table.
I'll be honest.
In this moment.
The metaphor in my mind was black hole. And then I was like, oh, is
racial,
there,
racial.
Is there going to be like a weird racial thing if I use the phrase black hole?
Yes.
As opposed to what I thought, which was, it's more of that, like you shoot out Hawking energy.
Wow. Okay. A Hawking energy. That's a decent save, but I won't allow it. But I do think it is just interesting because, for instance, Andrew is a much stronger writer than me. I think I struggle to kind of get the words on the page in a way that, you know, for instance, a stand-up feels very comfortable and very like, okay, I can do this. Whereas writing, I'm like, stupid. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so like when we do stuff and we do stuff together and people, you know, they kind of assume I took the lead on it. And it's like, no. Y'all don't understand. You would not have had a final draft in time if you was just fucking with me, because I am on an emotional journey with every word I write. You know what I mean? And he's much more like, this is it. This is what we have to do.
Right.
That's what, and people often assume that Kumail is handling all the comedy and the stuff we write together and I'm handling all the emotional stuff, when often it's the other way around. Like Kumail is incredibly good at like, at having dialogue that's like deeply emotional, but doesn't kind of feel like it at first glance, all this stuff. And it's weird to like when someone gives you credit for something you didn't do, and then you feel like a weirdo being like, no, it was him. It wasn't me. I have high self-esteem, I swear, but that one wasn't me. And that's it's a weird, those parts are all kind of odd for the ego. I think for us, those of us who are less public.
But I will also say, in our case, also, Emily is the one who is just like, you're better at writing. You've just learned a lot in the years since The Big Sick, because you've constantly gone job to job writing. And whereas I kind of really didn't write for a long time.
I became a superhero.
I did like acting stuff. I mostly worked out and avoided carbs. That was my job. I focused on like acting stuff.
Yeah.
And neglected the writing part of it. So then when we started writing again together a few months ago, I was like, oh, Emily's like gotten so much better and more confident and learned so much. Whereas I am still where I was 3 years ago.
I think you all kind of, everybody has to kind of check their ego a little bit at the door, which can be hard. That can be hard sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the most difficult
thing. Oh, I thought you were going to disagree with me and say that I'm very good, but I guess.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You're very good at writing. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
Okay, cool. No. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Andrew. Continue.
No, the ego thing is extremely, because I grew up extremely, I guess, arrogant is the best word.
I was going to say constantly praised.
Constantly, well, for intellectual stuff, constantly
being
praised.
A smart good boy,
right? All the little gold stars and pats on my head,
right,
for being a good boy,
right?
and you know, that kind of rages out of control, and then you are in a relationship with someone who, you know, at least the public stuff,
you know.
I mean, Naomi is such a good stand-up.
Thank you, so much.
You're welcome.
I'm not
blowing smoke up your butt. I'm just saying. I mean, it's true. Right?
It's important. It's important you say that to Emily and Kumail right now.
Yeah, she's a very good stand-up. I agree with everything you're saying, especially that she's a very good stand-up.
That's not what this is about. Okay, focus. Refocus.
No, but it's tough to, like, then kind of reconceptualize who you are in a relationship where your ego is in some way subsumed under your partner's.
Uh-huh.
Especially
Does that make
when
sense? It's not the right verb I want, but like that has the flavor.
Well, I think it's also too, because the reason why I was asking you too about like when you notice this change is because what I know of, I think of you guys as meltdown, right? So to me, it's like Emily and Kumail meltdown. Like if you guys were the same, like equal to me in that way, right? And so then this, you watch stuff happen to people basically, right? You guys live the lives you're always living, but just what people see when they look at you changes, in essence, right? Like, you do the work, but it's also people suddenly now decide, oh, this is this, and this person is this, and this is
that's cool,
you know?
Right.
So that's what I was wondering. I was like, you know, when you realize, like, oh, shit, you're seeing something different. Because, again, over 14 years, us for 10, like, you know, to me, it's like, Andy knows me performing in the basement of comics. You know what I'm saying? Like,
so
it's like, remember
what
Ochi's?
What was that room called?
Oh, Ochi's Lounge.
Ochi's Lounge.
Ochi's Lounge. He was the bathroom attendant.
Oh, we were so young.
I used to work there. That was my first job in comedy.
It was?
I wrote the press releases for the comics who were coming for the weekends.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
It was rough.
It was a good room for how terrible
it was. It was a great room. But yeah, and I also think, too, your partner is supposed to be, in my head, the person who supports you no matter what, whereas my writing partner gets to tell me, no, that's complete shit, we have to redo that. And that's a tough thing.
Yes.
Going from that, the person you love, being the person who's just like, oh, honey, your boss is an idiot. You're right at everything you do, to being like, oh, no, you also think I suck? Okay, cool. I guess that's a really tough, it's a tough, like, you got to switch hats, I guess.
Yeah. Do you guys do anything to switch hats? Like, our couples therapist, for instance, told us, you know, make it working hours so that we weren't constantly talking about the project, you know? So, like, at 6, you're done. It doesn't, if you have a thought, write it down.
That's what we do is we ask the other person permission to bring up work stuff. So, if it's, like, Saturday. So, right now, especially now, we have a very strict, like, weekend rule, right? So on the weekends, Friday to Monday, we do not work at all.
Saturday, Sunday. We don't work.
Right, Saturday, Sunday, we don't work. Friday after, like, 6 p.m., we don't do it.
Party.
And 6 p.m. every day, right? So if she thinks of something, she has to be like, hey, can I bring up a work thing? So we definitely, through experience, have put in a lot of rules to separate our working life with our marriage.
Also, no talking about it in bed. That's a big one.
Yes. But sometimes that's like when I'm the most comfortable. It's almost like, you know, when people say like the good ideas come to them in the shower. It's always for me like halfway going to sleep or halfway waking up where I'm like, I've cracked it.
Right. Well, I think, you know.
And then you write like a note down and then you look at it the next morning and it says toothpicks. And you're like, shit, what did I do?
I mean, I think that that's, you know, a lot of like songwriters, for instance, write first thing in the morning. Your brain is like, you're not judging yourself as much. Those walls are down. As you said earlier, Naomi, that thing where you're like, oh, this is bad. As I'm writing, you're doing like an emotional journey for every word, right?
Yeah.
I think the biggest block for me with writing has been just judging what I'm doing as I'm doing it. And I just do that less when I'm like waking up in the morning or going to bed at night or like in the middle of the night, whatever, that kind of stuff.
Just write it down. Don't bring that into my bed. Do not. I can't. I can't handle it. And then, because he'll do it right before bed, he'll be like, I don't think act three works. Good night.
I won't say that.
Well, you'll say something.
I come with solutions.
Equivalent. You'll be like, I think we need to work on this. Okay, good night. And go straight to sleep. And then I'm up for 2 more hours. Just fretting. Fretting by myself in bed.
Because I was right.
Man, as we've been talking, you guys have to navigate, and us in some way too, you have to navigate the public persona of who you are, the fictional persona of who you are, and the reality of who you are, which is a lot to put in one relationship, to have all these kind of like dimensions to walk through.
Oh God, you're right.
Well,
what
we have is the other thing that we've done now. So we were sort of like, I would say famously married. And we had been even before the Big Sick, like in terms of like when I was doing stand-up, all my comedy friends knew Emily. So I was like sort of known as like, I was the first one of all our friends to get married. I was the first one of all the comedian group to get married, right? And so we were always like the married couple of the group. We were, in some ways, we were their parents. And now our friends have lapped us and gotten married later and had multiple kids and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, so we were always known as like the married couple. And we did a podcast years earlier called The Indoor Kids that kind of was sort of, you know, we became like, people would be like marriage goals, right? Yeah. And now we've gone back and started doing this podcast called Staying In with Emily and Kumail.
Nice plug.
Just for the quarantine.
Casual. No, I loved it.
It was casual.
Effortless.
So we're recording our last episode like this week, right?
Oh, okay.
And so, but it's also tough because you start doing that and it's me and Emily just talking to each other, right? Again, we're putting our marriage on display in a way that is very real. Like people think they know us and they know our relationship because they do know us and they do know our relationship. They don't know everything about it, but those are pretty unfiltered, heavy conversations we have sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it's
uncomfortable.
It is hard because we have to sort of pursue, like, should I mention that thing that happens when we leave the house?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Okay.
Kumail turns into a werewolf. Sorry.
I turn into a werewolf.
Even the daylight?
It's like the people who you know, see The Big Sick and think we're that, the people who see us like in some sort of like party situation and you know, see that. And then there's the people who listen to the podcast. Here is actually talking.
And we chose every bit of it. what's kind of crazy.
So that's part of why I think we're stopping the podcast too, because it's like you sort of start feeling very like the way we felt when Big Sick came out. We just felt very naked.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm starting to feel like that again a little bit, and it's like, no, we have to really curate what part of ourselves we present to people.
Have you guys ever said anything on the podcast that you've been like, oh, that was maybe a bridge too far for our relationship?
To say out loud?
Yeah, I know.
There was one episode of our Patreon that we totally scrapped because we ended up fighting on it. And at first I thought it was like, oh, maybe that's interesting. And then I was like, no.
That's not interesting.
No, it's too.
Oh, it might be interesting, but you shouldn't do it anyway. Yeah.
It's too. I think when we started doing this, we talked about like, we can't give ourselves entirely over to our public personas. There have to be boundaries. And we're both terrible at drawing boundaries, but we've been very diligent in this respect. We just have to like, there just has to be things that we don't talk about in public.
I think that's just so smart for us. That's so smart. And I think, and we kept saying that when we were working on The Big Sick, we said it and we still say it now, which is like anything that fell out of The Big Sick got to go back to being just ours because so much of our story belongs to a lot of people. But, and I think that's true now, like you have to intentionally choose the things that you're not going to say because I don't think it definitely would be more entertaining to just let it all out. But like, what is your actual goal? Is it to like be entertaining or is it to like keep a life with someone that you love and continue that life? It's like these people who think that you have to be miserable to be an artist. It's the same kind of thing. Like you don't have to like bleed your entire relationship dry to get something out of it and to entertain people and make people like feel good and included. Like, and you shouldn't. I'm so glad that you two do that because I feel like a lot of people don't. It's easy to get lured into just putting it all out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the pressures of coming out here, I think, or being in this business in general is commodifying every part of your life, right? Yep. And like grinding it through the capitalist machine.
Ooh, baby, yes. Talk about that capitalist machine.
But no, but there is a pressure.
I know, I do.
To put a price tag on every emotion you have and put it out there for public consumption.
Yeah.
And I think it takes, there are some couples who I think, again, I don't know what goes on inside their actual lives, but like where it seems like that's what they've done.
Right.
It's a performative relationship. Yeah.
Yes. I think we live in a world like so much of, you know, especially to me, I see just Instagram, so much of that, like the performing, especially like motherhood. There's like a lot of performing around me and the hubs, hashtag family, hashtag Saturdays. You know what I mean? Like there's so much about it. But I also think though, I found that was hard though, because like a lot of my stand up is, most of it is like personal shit. Right? Like, not necessarily heavy, but just something that has happened. And so it's hard for me to kind of turn that off because then sometimes I'll be like, well, what do I have to talk about? And if it's not my own life, then there's certain things you don't. I'm like, I don't know if that's for somebody. Or I'm like, that might be a little too dark to be funny. Like, trying to, but it's taken me a while to learn what that line is. And I think it was a lot easier in the beginning, and I don't know if you ever felt this way, Kumail, but like early on where it was like, well, I'm just doing stand-up. Who knows if this is my job? We're trying it. It was almost like, let me say it all because I don't know how long I'm going to do it. I don't know what people like yet. And I would just put it out. But then as when it became like, oh, this is my job and I'm going to probably do this for a while, now I have to pick and choose.
Mm.
Right. You have to really define your voice and you just have to be very careful because now you could sort of say something that could really, instead of just like trying stuff, you know, anytime you get on stage, whatever you say, it could be, it could be like news, right? I mean like you have to really, at that point, craft who you are as a performer and stick to that.
And also have your persona not be a thing that's like 100% your, it has to be the processed version of you. Like it has to be the product version of you.
Right. You exactly have to like, you sort of, this is going to sound gross, but you think of yourself, you have to as a brand, which is like, okay, so what of me is part of this brand and what of me is not part of this brand?
Yeah.
And what is not part of your brand is also very, very important because as you're saying, it can be so easy to just live completely publicly and give everything up. And I think that that's a very stressful way of living.
It feels exhausting too, because then you have to like keep doing stuff to like make more stuff.
Yeah, Emily, I'm weary.
Yeah.
I told you this. It's too much. It can't be done.
It's exhausting.
It is, and it's also really exhausting when you first start like getting some success on social media, and you really start feeling it then, right? Like if someone's really, really famous, once they become like a superstar, they can leave social media. And when you're like not known at all, you don't need social media. It's the time when you first start getting success to like when you become that like whole window, which is huge, which is most people's entire careers. That's where it sucks because you kind of need to keep being at it.
Yeah.
But you also don't want it to define you. So you know, we've talked about this years ago, but now I think we're sort of locked into it, which is like, these are the things that will not be part of social media. Like if we just take pictures of ourselves, those are not going on social media.
No.
Unless we're like, all right, let's take this one and we'll put this one out.
Yeah. You know?
So we as gross as it sounds, we have to like make that decision.
Right.
Because most of our lives, we try and keep to ourselves. Even when we were writing The Big Sick, there were certain details of stuff that actually happened to us that somewhat arbitrarily we decided we wouldn't put in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, wait, can I ask both Naomi and Kumail, like, at what point did you realize there were enough eyes on you that you had to change the way you were saying things or writing things, either saying things in stand-up or writing things on Twitter or whatever?
I have one specific situation I remember, and I won't name the specifics, but there was I had a run-in with someone who is
very famous.
Very famous, and is still very famous.
At a comedy club.
Yes, much, much more famous than me, right? And not a comedian, in another thing. Like, very, very famous. I had a weird run-in with this guy. So then I wrote a bit about it that was very funny. It was like a 5 to 7 minute bit, and it was a story, and I would do it on stage, and it would kill. It was just like part of my act, and I would do it, and I would name the person. And then at a certain point, I did it, and then it sort of got picked up, and it was on all these publications, right? Mm. Where it was like Huffington Post and all this stuff. So
yeah,
and that's when I was like, oh, okay, so this person who I don't know had a bad night. I had a bad interaction with them.
And you're now trying to like...
And now I don't want to... A couple things. One, I don't want to feel like I'm taking like I'm sort of using that weird experience to commodify, as you were saying, Andrew. I also don't want to like rain hell down on this person because that wasn't the point of the bit. The bit was I just was doing it because it was funny.
You don't want to become known as the guy who like...
Right.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, for instance, like, so this Marvel movie, right? Like, I was doing an interview for Lovebirds last week and someone was like, randomly was like, who would win in a fight, your character or Deadpool? And I was like, my character, but I can't tell you why. That's all.
Yeah.
There have been at least 40 to 50 news stories about that one line.
No.
If you look up Kumail Deadpool... It's all everywhere, like, ooh, Kumail reveals secrets of his characters. Marvel secrets are like, shots fired. Because they're just like looking for something. So I've found now you can't really have a real conversation with anybody who you're doing an interview with, even though that's not...
Sure.
Even though that's nothing.
Yeah, right.
Have you found the same thing, Naomi?
By the way, hold on. That's legitimately insane.
It's like the funniest thing to me, which is I love Marvel secrets.
Yeah.
He said, didn't even say anything. Like, you gave no information.
Quick, Kumail,
no
you were Nightcrawler. Who would win?
Fuck Nightcrawler.
Uh-oh. Getting this trending.
Shots fired.
Shots fired.
Sorry, Naomi.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. I never really felt that. I don't know. Like, I noticed, I feel like in the last year or so, when I did Two Dope Queens, because that podcast was so popular, suddenly people were paying attention to me.
Right.
But it wasn't really until, like, I felt like the last year or so where I started getting scolded. Do you know what I mean? Like, I guess people feel like I'm now at a level where what I say, like, you shouldn't say that given your standing. And I was like, oh, I have standing? Okay. That's what
a disappointment.
Was.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then like, when people are like, you've disappointed me, I'm like, you don't get to talk to me like I'm like your mom. Like, I only get to disappoint her. What are you talking about? That doesn't seem fair.
I know. But I think that was an adjustment, I think, more so.
Well, you were tweeting a lot of pro-Stalin stuff.
Well, you know how I love my fascism. What? Oh, God. Don't let me riff at this hour of the day.
You don't want to riff about a Russian dictator?
No.
All right. Fair enough.
Emily Kumail, I just want to... This is our time. I want to thank you so much for chatting with us in quarantine.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you too as well.
Thank you for having us.
You guys are wonderful. You're just really, I've always just felt you guys deep in my bones. And Emily, after all of our emails, I realized, Emily, I figured it out. I feel like our email friendship started with the big sick. I feel like I emailed you about something separate.
Oh.
And then at the same time, like the nominee, this is not important given everything that's going on. And I was like, I hope you're taking care of yourself and finding time for joy. Like it was something like that. Cause I feel like when like life is a whirlwind, I was like, I want you to rest. I want you to become
comfortable. But I also like the people who send you, who don't like, you're like, oh, I'm in the middle of this huge thing. And then you'll get an email and you're like, oh yeah, the rest of the world is still happening. It's a great perspective of like, yeah, shit. Like you can't just be like constantly focused on your own whirlwind. So I have always appreciated our email relationship. And if we ever get to see each other in person, let's hang out.
We're going to do it. We're going to hang out. We're going to bring the cats and do a puzzle. It'll be really good. You guys, thank you so much and have a wonderful day.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye. Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.